Everybody has heard of Roswell, and that is obviously one of the most famous incidents that has taken place. And some believe it's real, and many people, I think, are convinced that is the case. So many witnesses. And then you have another incident that my friend Art and others have told me about that took place before that in Missouri. It was around 1941. And this is another UFO, supposedly a crash that took place. I know very little, almost nothing about it. Paul Smith, who is from Missouri, he's learned a lot. He's done a lot of research on it, and he is my guest this week on Out There. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for joining me. When did you first start taking interest in this crash of 1941?
I began hearing about it around the year 2000. Maybe some of your listeners will remember the old Art Bell Coast to Coast, which began to mention this story. Mm. It had been written down, some of it, in a letter and passed around to UFO researchers in the 1990s. And people like Ryan Wood and Robert Wood and Linda Moulton Howe and even Leonard Stringfield and a few others of note began to investigate. And I would read a little paragraph here or there in a book, and I just couldn't find any books that were entirely about a subject in my own hometown, so I decided to write what became known as Bull 41, The Bombshell Before Roswell.
You did that one, and you also did another book, a couple of books you've done, right?
I got so much leftover information I couldn't cram into the first book, and then people began contacting me with their own stories after they read the first book that I created a second book called Three Presidents, Two Accidents, More Mo 41 UFO Crash Information and Surprises.
So, Paul, you live in Missouri. What part of Missouri are you from?
I'm from Cape Girardeau. I was born and raised there and went to school and even college at Southeast Missouri State University in Cape Girardeau.
No kidding. So you've been there pretty much all your life, right?
Most of my life, when I was a boy, I would play Little League baseball in the park. And my umpire was quite often a big, hulking young man who was picking up extra work. He was named Rusty. You know him better today as Rush Limbaugh, the broadcaster.
Really? Get out of here.
He was my umpire, although I admit, as an adult, I have not met him. His grandfather and my grandfather were both friends. They were both attorneys in Cape, and their sons were also attorneys. My father, actually a paralegal. They were quite well acquainted. Cape was a small town. In 1941, we had about 20,000 for a population, and today it's roughly 40,000.
Okay. And how was Rush Limbaugh as an umpire? Was he pretty good?
Yes, he was an intimidating presence for a skinny little kid like me. You just did what he told you, and you didn't argue balls and strikes, that's for
sure.
I suppose
not. Not as a kid back then. So, did you believe in UFOs growing up? Was that something?
I would hear little stories now and then, and it intrigued me, but I was not a UFO nut or someone who went looking for them. And in fact, to this day, I've never seen a UFO. When I get interviewed for my book, people just naturally assume I'm all about UFOs and that I've seen some, but neither is really the case. But this is such an amazing story, I figured maybe it's for the best that way, to let someone a little more objective research and get all the names and places and look up magazines, newspapers, various books, videos, and someone who knows the area, knows the people. So I think it turned out pretty well, and you can still go to my Facebook page called Cape Girardeau's 1941 UFO Crash, America's First, and find more information. And if you have any inside scoops you'd like to pass along, just Facebook me a message and we'll get that data down.
It's amazing that you take this up kind of like your life's work. Almost, and I've asked this of people before that have been on my show, it's almost like you're destined to do this. Don't you feel in some way, Paul?
Yes, and here's another odd thing. When I was a boy, I had two or three recurring nightmares of a spaceship crashing at night. And it was so terrifying to me that I woke up in a cold sweat, and yet I knew nothing at the time of any 1941 UFO crash. That's a little odd, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you might have lived back then in another lifetime.
Well, my father was 6 years old at the time, and he was in Cape Girardeau. And according to my research, Rush Limbaugh's father had arrived for the Easter holiday weekend, and he was around, and he was obsessed with aviation. He hung around pilots and the airport any chance he got and learned to fly at an early age. So if there's any hope that Rush Limbaugh has details, it would be likely from his father, who was there or on the periphery that weekend. Someone called in the Rush Limbaugh National Radio Show some 10 years ago, and they said, Rush, what's up with this UFO crash in your hometown? And instead of dismissing the caller and saying, you know, get out of here with this nonsense, he simply said, there's more to this story than you might think. And then he moved on to the next caller. So that gives you an idea that he knows something. And a source told me that Rush found out about the story when he was in high school in the early 60s, but I have not confirmed that.
You know, and on his show, I understand why it wouldn't be wise for him to go down that avenue. There's just some areas, you know, not yet. Maybe someday. But, you know, people's attitude.
Right.
Do you feel that people's attitudes are changing, Paul, that, you know, people are becoming more open to these kind of things?
I certainly do. Cape Girardeau was a very conservative church-going town in 1941, and it somewhat is to this day. And people are open to at least talking about it now after decades of, like, Mork and Mindy and E.T. and mm-hmm. Close Encounters and all kinds of media profiles of aliens. We're much more open-minded about these things now.
Well, let's get to the story then. Paul, you've researched this for how many years now, since 2000?
I would say at least the last 5 or 6 years more intensely.
Okay.
I will emphasize really quick, my own stepmother said she heard the story when she was in high school in the 1960s. So some people knew this before it became big and was produced on a sci-fi channel show called The Secret, Evidence That We Are Not Alone. Mm-hmm. That was around 2002. It also made a History Channel, a program called MUFON Hangar One. And then in 2016, the History Channel profiled the cover of my book and included in Ancient Aliens, the Cape Girardeau UFO crash, in an episode called Beyond Roswell. You can look these things up and even buy copies to this day. But it all began around 1991 for most of the public when a woman named Charlotte Huffman Mann sent a letter to some UFO researchers, and they passed it around and started investigating. And she was relating what her grandmother and her grandfather said about this strange phone call they got one night in mid-April of 1941. The Reverend William Guy Huffman ran out of the house, got into an unmarked car, and was taken out to the countryside, and the family didn't know where Reverend Huffman was going. And he got back around midnight, shaken and pale and really obviously rattled by what had just happened. And so naturally, they were very concerned, and they asked him, what's going on? And he told them, well, you know that phone call we had? That was for me to go out to a plane crash outside of town and minister to the victims and their families to provide spiritual comfort. When we got out there, there were flames and wreckage, and the Cape Girardeau Fire Department, Police Department, Sheriff's Department, FBI, and the media, a couple of reporters with big flash cameras, were all out there around a circular crashed spacecraft, silver in color, and it was cracked open with metallic aluminum foil-like debris all over this field. There was a fire, and then the firemen were struggling to put it out in smoke. And off to one side were three small gray alien bodies. They seemed to be somewhat crinkly, or like their skin was having a reaction to our oxygen-rich atmosphere. And two were quite dead, Reverend Huffman said. When he knelt by the third to offer any kind of spiritual comfort, he could see its chest going up and down, and it died right in front of him. And so he said his prayers, as he was asked to do, and noted people picking up pieces of shrapnel and peeking into the spaceship. So naturally, he was curious, and he went over to the spaceship, got himself quite an eyeful. And around this time, more people, first responders, as we would call them today, showed up, and local farmers. And they all naturally were talking about this. It was just amazing. According to a woman I interviewed who's now passed away, she said, I was about 10 years old at the time, and my family was talking about this outer space ship, they called it, with little people that crashed outside of town. She said, we did not use the term extraterrestrial or alien or UFO or anything like that, which I think lends her more credibility. So this was something that should have been, way before Roswell, 6 whole years, the biggest story on the face of the earth. And everything was going along those lines. The newspaper reporter was gathering interviews and taking the big flash photos. And he asked two men to hold up one of the aliens, the dead one, and one of the two dead ones, and pose for a picture. So they did, and they stretched its arms out. And it had a big round head with big black eyes and gray skin and a tiny little slit for a mouth and tiny little dots for nostrils and no ears and four digits or three fingers and one thumb, very long arms and legs. And they took this picture with a special Brownie box camera, and he stuck it, the photographer stuck it back in his pocket. Well, soon enough, the Army arrived and ruined everything. They hemmed in the site, closed in, said, put that shrapnel and debris down, don't touch this, no pictures, give us all your film, your notes, you're not to talk about this. This never happened. It's a matter of national security. You will keep your mouth shut for the rest of your lives. Sadly, many people took that to heart, and I don't think they ever spoke. They were so shaken up. Apparently, Reverend Huffman said he was taken into the back of a military truck along with some firemen and, you know, sworn to secrecy and told, you will not discuss this. But happily for us, he went home around midnight and told his family the whole story right away.
That's good.
It would just be something you would be bursting to get off your chest, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
So the family wrote this down, but they kept it generally undercover. And about a week or two after the crash, this photographer showed up on their front door at their home on Main Street in Cape Girardeau. And the man said, I have a copy of this photo that I took, and I want you to have a copy. And it was of this held up, propped up alien. And Reverend Huffman said he didn't really want the photo. There was an atmosphere of fear in Cape Girardeau. Everyone's afraid that the government's going to show up at your door, the police. There was an Army training facility in town. So that he just gave it to his son. I think his son stuck it in a drawer somewhere. And it's the most amazing photograph because we know that Charlotte Huffman Mann said in the 1950s, when she was around 10 or 11, the family would get it out and pass it around and whisper about this spaceship crash, and they wouldn't tell her too many details. It was maybe too scary or traumatizing, but she got many glimpses of the photo. And this is how, in the 1980s, she asked her grandmother, please tell me the story. I want to know about this spaceship crash. Her grandfather, William, had passed away, and her grandmother, Floy, was very ill with cancer. And so after much pleading, Grandma Floy told the whole story, and that's how Charlotte wrote it into a letter, and it got passed around and turned into some segments of television programs that we see to this day. And I managed to find other small corroborating bits of the story which are most interesting and filled out two books, as I say.
So she's the main witness in all of this. Were there other witnesses that came forward to share similar stories?
A very similar sounding story from a man named Philip Reynolds, I think his name is. He was a grandson of a Cape Girardeau fireman, I think his name was Walter Reynolds, who said that he showed up at the crash, and the story is true, that it turned out to be an alien spaceship with three dead bodies, and that he was helping to fight the fire, and that the Army showed up, and they caught him trying to stick some of the debris in his pocket. And they said, give that back right now and get out of here. They booted him out of the crash site. And in the aftermath, in the days, perhaps weeks afterwards, Mr. Reynolds said that he was being followed around town, or at least being watched, let's put it that way, and that his phone was tapped. And I checked, and it turns out the FBI had an office in Cape Girardeau. They would have sent an agent to the scene, and they were wild about tapping people's phones. J. Edgar Hoover was running amok with phone taps back in the 1940s. It was illegal, but he did it anyway. So I feel that side of the story really does check out. So much of this stuff can't be concretely proven, and I've not quite pinned down the actual crash site in case some of your listeners want to go there to this day. Even if I knew, I'm not sure if I would
tell. You know what, Paul? I hear it's over at your house. We're going to start showing up looking around. No, that wouldn't be so good. Nobody showed up at Paul's house.
That's the problem for anyone who declares, yeah, I've got the crash site on my farm. it is a farm, and it's a private property, and it's somebody's business, and they just can't have people traipsing around at all hours of the day and night in unguarded property with no fence. Can you imagine people starting to dig up your yard or your crop?
Absolutely.
Or going to the bathroom behind a tree and leaving their garbage and camping out overnight and going crazy. So even if I knew the precise site, I would not tell it. So it will probably remain a mystery. I got it pinned down fairly closely, but even I'm a little afraid to go knocking on people's doors out there. It's a rural community, and there has been a crime over the years, and people are a little on edge. And it's just outside of Cape Girardeau city and county limits, and for that reason, they filmed a movie in the very close by neighborhood. It was like a straight-to-video film, and one of the reasons they shot the film there was so they could fire off guns legally outside the county and not get arrested. So that was around the year 2000, I think.
So this story obviously didn't get the attention that Roswell, but it sounds similar when you talked about metallic. You know, that's what they found. Jesse Marcel was holding up like a metallic. Was this? Do you know if this was the same type of stuff that you could crumble up and it would gain its shape back? Did you ever hear anything like
that? Yeah, I surely did. Here's another interesting story on Topics, the online forum. People wrote in about the crash, and one person said, I know it really did occur because my grandparents told me this is where they were farming, and it was their property where the crash occurred. They really didn't want to tell him much more than that, but the guy became an adult, and he traveled to Cape Girardeau, and he went to the farm and found the old man who had bought the property from his grandparents. He said that while digging a kind of well, the man found these small, strange bits of metal that had markings on them, imprints or symbols. They were just like aluminum foil and could not be creased, could permanently anyway. They could not be cut. He even tried some special like barbed wire cutters on the farm. Couldn't cut it at all. So he gathered it all up, and he stuck it in his barn for many years, and now the barn is gone, and the farmer won't say where he put this material, which would, of course, be blockbuster if someone could bring this forward, worth a small fortune, I should think. But it might also bring the wrath of the government down on you, and so he's wisely keeping his mouth shut.
I would think, Paul, if he came forward, as we've seen time and again, from if you look at all these other UFO incidents, when people find something or when they get something, it tends to disappear. And evidence, and you and I were talking about this before the interview. You know, I interview people that investigate all different types of things. And it seems like with many different types of phenomena, if you find evidence of something, let's say you videotape something, and there was a woman I know. I don't know if you heard of Linda Godfrey. She's been on my show before. But she does investigations for what's called the dog man or the man wolf. And they were filming something in Lower Michigan, and they thought they spotted some kind of creature. They put the evidence, and I'm guessing a videotape, in their vehicle. When they got back to the vehicle late in the morning, because they stayed out in the field longer, the evidence was gone. And I'm thinking that this happens with probably everything.
Reminds me of a quick story about someone who was digging into the Robert F. Kennedy assassination and some photographs that they had discovered that were locked away in government files, and they got their hands on them, like filed a court order and got them. And they were driving them home and stopped to go in a restaurant real quick, went back to the car, and guess what was missing?
The photos were gone, huh?
Yep. There goes that proof.
Yeah, I believe there's been a lot of things. You believe that things have been, especially with UFOs, have been covered up, that they've basically, if you see something, there's been an agenda to either make you look like you're an idiot or maybe just to ignore you completely. Have you witnessed that, or do you believe that goes on as well, Paul?
I believe that's quite possible. Certainly no one has spoken to me, and I get that question a lot. Did the government come and, you know, men in black? But no, I'm just a little nobody putting together a story that's over 75 years old. The part of the problem with researching it is not only are all the original witnesses deceased, but in many cases I found their children are deceased. So it's really tough to get direct quotes and a lot of first-hand information. I did the best I could, and interviewed some people who vaguely remember the crash or remember somebody who spoke of the crash is now deceased. A number of cases were all about how the material was scooped up that night when the military came in, and it was probably taken to an air base in Sikeston, Missouri, that was pretty top security. It was a training field just before World War II began. This was April of 1941. We didn't go to war till December of 1941, but it was becoming more and more obvious we were going to be involved. And that leads to where some of the immediate secrecy came in. Cape Girardeau, I know from having grown up there and reading and hearing about it, we had a very large German contingent in town, a German community, and within that maybe a small handful could have been pro-Hitler and pro-Axis powers from the Eastern Europeans. And this exciting find in the soil of a farm had to be kept secret right from the start and not let German or Nazi forces find out. And if that sounds a little odd, I discovered an article 1 month before the crash in the Cape Girardeau newspapers that the FBI had opened up a field office in Cape Girardeau to help deal with some of the espionage and sabotage going on in the area, because there really were like pro-Nazi spies.
Interesting.
So it's all starting to make more sense why they covered this up right from the start and threatened people to keep your mouth shut. It was important for national security. It gave FDR and our scientists a kind of a top secret weapon that the other side did not know about. And from what I researched, I don't even think we told our friend Churchill or the British about what we got in our hands on. It was considered, quote, a state secret.
You know, Paul, and I look at, like, you know, Ancient Aliens and all these other shows that are uncovering things. Mm-hmm. And not just Ancient Aliens, but there's been many different shows. But there seems to be at least a theory. I don't know if there's evidence or people have, but there seems to believe that in Russia there was a crash disk, and also there's a theory that during Hitler's time in Germany there was a crash disk. Have you heard about those at all?
I have heard just a little bit about that, and it might be true. The crash disk in Germany might have even preceded Cape Girardeau, but it's so darn sketchy that even the Cape Girardeau one, we're still trying to find out information. I checked FDR's digitized online White House records. And the night of Saturday, April 12th, he was up unusually late, past midnight, before he even went up to his bedroom, it says. And he usually went to bed between like 10:30, 10:45. And that night was the night before Easter. And on previous nights, previous Easters, he and Eleanor would get up extra early, being associated with the Freemasons. FDR was extremely Masonic. He was like 33 degrees. And they would go to a sunrise service put on by the Knights Templar at Arlington Cemetery. They did not do that the next morning. In fact, Eleanor, on the night of the crash, which I feel was April 12th, was in Boston. She and her entourage were supposed to take a flight down to Washington, D.C., so they could be there in the morning to go to this special Knights Templar ceremony. Well, suddenly, for some reason, her plane was canceled, and she described in her My Day column having to gather her entourage and their luggage, and they were not allowed to get on another flight. Later on, they had to stick to the ground and take a train car, all the way from Boston to Washington. So that's another indication something was up that night that worried people. And I also looked up General George Marshall, the Army Chief of Staff, very revered by the Roosevelts. He was in charge of all Army goings-on. He was scheduled to fly across the country to Georgia, and his flight was apparently canceled, and he stopped his tour that Saturday night. So something was up that had to be dealt with, and since you didn't know what's going on, like, is this the first craft, a scout craft, in an invasion of some kind? I think people in the know were told to stay on the ground or maybe even stay indoors, but it's tough to prove, but that's a factor involved in that we were very naive. There was no popular culture about aliens and spaceships back in that day. It was just not talked about.
Do you think the government knew about them, though, even back then?
I would doubt it, but it's possible. If there were other crashes before that, I don't know of any. I've heard that in 1942, there might have been a crashed ship from the so-called Battle of Los Angeles, some sort of crash recovered in the hills of San Bernardino Mountains. So that would have been some 9 or 10 months later.
Now, also, since you touched on this, Paul, if you don't mind, can you explain, because maybe a lot of people haven't heard of this, and I've heard of it a little bit. I haven't really done a lot of research. The Battle of Los Angeles, something shows up in the skies during World War II, and they think it maybe is a Nazi or Japanese craft, but it's not, and they're firing on this craft, and it caused a pretty big panic, didn't it?
It did. People were thinking, really, that it was a Japanese aerial attack. They were going to be bombed or strafed. But the craft, or crafts, whichever, did not fire back. According to reports that I've read, there were no bombs dropped by anybody. American aerial gunners got out their best artillery and fired at these craft and may have hit something and knocked it out of the sky. And in a covert operation, it might have been recovered in outside of Los Angeles in the mountains. And supposedly, something may have come down in the Pacific Ocean as well. There's also a little story that sometime in 1941, an entire intact craft was found in Louisiana. And this leads to a story of a gentleman who wanted to remain anonymous. But he wrote a letter to a UFO investigator and said, I worked for the Army and for later the CIA. And he gave a credible sounding account of his career and said, one of the things I want to pass along before I pass from this world, he had cancer, is that there was a crash of an aerodyne, he called it, in Missouri in 1941. And that we also found, not too long after, a second ship in Louisiana that was apparently intact. And these became very prized scientific prizes or, you know, objects for intense study that to see if we could weaponize them, to turn their perhaps atomic or nuclear-powered engines into the Manhattan Project. And that gets into another kettle of fish that I wrote about in my book. And it's possible that the Cape Girardeau crash helped influence the atom bomb, which Harry Truman dropped on the Japanese.
Right.
Guess who spent one summer in Cape Girardeau as a resident? Harry Truman. And I think 1909 or 1906, he was with the Army training camp in Cape Girardeau. And he later went on to be a senator and a top Freemason. At the time of the crash, he was Missouri senator in Washington, D.C. So there's all kinds of strange connections with this interesting
tale. So they
were
saying that they did back engineering on maybe perhaps the crash. They did reverse engineering. You know, there's obviously reports. There was a Colonel Corso who came out with a book before he died. I think
right.
It was somewhere around 2000, somewhere in that neighborhood. And he talked about they used the Roswell crash to back engineer.
And he mentioned there were other crashes from what he heard, but he did not specify Missouri, but he said, I found out there were other crashes. So President Roosevelt in 1941 had one prized scientist named Dr. Vannevar Bush. And so I checked FDR's Oval Office records, and sure enough, I think it was on the Wednesday after that Saturday night, guess who comes into the Oval Office alongside Dr. McIntyre, that was FDR's personal physician. They got a special closed-door session in FDR's White House, and in talking to a UFO researcher, he said Dr. Vannevar Bush's name comes up in UFO crash recovery studies all the time. This has to have been the very first meeting with a president over these materials that they were probably being assigned to autopsy the craft and autopsy the bodies.
And why do you think that they keep it from the public? I know national security is always the excuse we get, but I don't see how that makes a whole lot of difference at this point.
Yeah, at the time of World War II, maybe you can understand that they would keep this a secret to help our war effort, because things were looking really bad in the first few years, like we might lose this fight, and we needed all the help that we could get, and loose lips sink ships, as they say. But afterwards, I think that it is possible that the nuclear-powered or atomic-powered mechanism that drove this ship, or flew it, so to speak, was weaponized and turned into technology that we could use, and therefore it was somewhat top secret. We had to keep atom bomb technology away from the Russians and other nations that eventually stole it anyways. But even to this day, the story from 1941 and 47, you know, Cape Girardeau and Roswell, this needs to be released to the public. We're so conditioned now from programs such as yours to learning more and more about these things and accepting that, yes, we are being visited. We shouldn't panic about it. It's just a matter of fact that we are not alone in the universe, and some creatures or races of beings are superior to us and can travel here and observe us, and they apparently show their smarts by not interacting too much and going home.
You know what, Paul? They're pretty bad drivers. Some of them are pretty bad drivers. If we've had,
I get this topic too. People ask, "Well, why are they so smart if they crashed?" And I'm here to tell you that American pilots know all about our flying mechanisms, our airplanes and helicopters and such, and they know all about our weather conditions and altitude and gravity, and they still crash. Mm-hmm. Imagine being from another planet and you don't understand our wind currents and our magnetic field and our gravity, and you try flying one of your alien crafts around here, see what happens.
You know, the thing is, too, with their craft, they can stop on a dime, you know? They can make a right angle, and they can take off at 10,000 miles an hour or whatever speed, just like that. So, like anything, I suppose there's an opportunity, you know, if it's running on some kind of mechanical, it's a device, things break down. Or even there could be operator error. Even if beings are more advanced than us, there still can always be. So I was kind of kidding about that. But maybe they need to go to driving school. I'm just...
Yeah. Pilot error can happen even in a humanoid-type being. A creature from another world makes a mistake.
There's some that have floated the theory that these crashes happen deliberately. Do you think there's any...
Yeah, I've heard that, yes. I don't know what to think. It is very strange that no beings went back for their fallen brethren lying on the ground dead. They didn't come back for the bodies or the ship, although I did uncover one person who said about a mile from the crash site, a spaceship came down in Cape Girardeau, and a crowd started to gather on the street, and the police showed up and said, "Don't go near them, don't touch them, just leave them be," and they eventually got into their craft, these little gray things, and took off. And I find that very interesting, especially when I found out there was a second crash site on the night of the Cape Girardeau UFO accident. Someone said, and it's a pretty sketchy story, I'll admit, that their parents found some crash material in their front yard about 1 mile from the crash site. And in talking to Linda Moulton Howe, she told me how in Roswell a second crash site was found, and they feel it was a escape pod that had ejected from the craft on its way down to Earth. So that might have been what came down in Cape Girardeau, although once again, this is just conjecture.
Right. Well, all of it really is when you think about it, Paul, because even Roswell, which has many more witnesses that have come forward, it's still hard to prove any of that, isn't it? Pretty hard to prove all that.
It is. As I point out in my book, Roswell had many accounts of a team of Army specialists came flying in to the Roswell Air Base and took off in jeeps. It was not the local Army personnel, really, who showed up, not too much anyway, and they knew just where to go and what to box up in the crate and to hush witnesses and cancel out a radio report. And you wonder, how did they get this experience?
Yeah.
How did they know what to do? Unless Cape Girardeau was a template, a training program in a sense.
You know, there's reports of UFOs going back to the time that we settled this country. I've seen different, you know, people that have made reports throughout history. There's also been reports of UFOs during wartime. Have you noticed that as well, Paul, that there seems to be more activity with UFOs?
It does seem that way, and maybe some of it is explainable, but some of it could be extraterrestrials are aghast at the way we treat each other and we treat our planet, and we're blowing things up and trying to kill each other and can't get along. So that may be of great concern to them, and they want to see things close up.
There was a report I saw, and I think I saw this on Ancient Aliens, but I've seen it on other shows. There was these three men back in the time of the Revolutionary War. They were traveling down... They were in a boat, and they were traveling down a river, and they had missing time. They saw this light. They reported it afterwards, and they wound up like half the night was gone. The next thing they know, they were pulling on shore. Have you heard about that report?
No, this is a factual report of a count from like many decades ago.
It's
or
back from in the 1700s.
Wow, that's quite interesting.
And then
I've not heard that.
And then there's reports of during the Civil War that people saw UFO-type crafts or unknown craft in the sky. And it seems like with every battle, every war, not every battle, but every war that's been involved, you know, we had the Foo Fighters during World War II, and even Vietnam, people talked about the Foo Fighters. And so are they keeping an eye on us, making sure we don't destroy things? Or I think they are. I think they're here to kind of keep us from, we could do a lot of damage, especially nowadays. You know, you've heard about the reports of when we started testing nuclear weapons, the missile silos being shut down by
yes.
some kind of craft. You've heard of that as well, Paul?
Yes, indeed. Is it possible that our nuclear weapons have technology culled from the Cape Girardeau crash and other crashes, so aliens know exactly how to shut down our atomic technology because we stole it from them?
Right.
It's an interesting theory. We can't prove it, but I have heard of such cases many times.
You know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say.
Well, I'm just going to say real quickly that if you want more information on many crashes, Ryan Wood has an excellent website and a book, majesticdocuments.com, and it includes a letter from one of the fathers of the atomic bomb, Dr. Edward Teller, who wrote to President Reagan in the 1980s. And a line in this letter says, 1939, that was 2 years before a captured UFO. And I'm thinking, bingo, that's Cape Girardeau again. And so also you might want to go to Covert Retrieval or SeekingMoInfo.com from Linda, I forgot her last name, but she put together, Linda Wallace, she put together some information, and it's worth checking out. And I have a website, too. It's not much. It's called Mo41.info. But to continue your line of thought, it does seem very strange that the government just seems to show up and put the lid clamped down on this, and some people think they're doing this in conjunction with aliens, you know, races that don't want this information out. It's so we may be double-teamed, the government and at least some aliens don't want us to know the truth.
You know, I think that, you know, some people say that the government is trying to, they don't want us to be afraid because we would then have to realize that something is superior to us. And they feel like, you know, the excuse always was that it's going to create mass panic. And I'm thinking, these beings are so much more advanced than us. If they wanted to, they could have annihilated us already. So the fact that we're still here is probably, it's a good thing. And it tells, it tells us some things that maybe these beings, that's not their intent.
I think the idea of an alien invasion is just far-fetched, and it's not going to happen. We are spreading out across this planet with more people than ever, reaping, if not raping, the planet of its resources, spreading disease. If you really wanted to invade us, I suppose you could, but now we're all armed to the teeth, and nations have nuclear weapons, and it just doesn't seem likely an alien race would want to come here. What would be the purpose? You know, they could spread disease to us, but frankly, we could spread disease to them. So that may be another reason why they just observe, kind of like in the the TV show and the movie Star Trek. They observe but don't get involved.
See, I believe that there is a group of a federation. When you mentioned Star Trek, I go, that's exactly what I believe. There was an incident that happened in 1953. And that was the Flatwoods Monster incident. Are you familiar with that at all?
I am not, no.
And a good friend of mine spent over 20 years researching that, but there were these craft that came into the United States over the Eastern Seaboard when we were doing war games, and it was four different types of craft, several craft, but four different races, it appeared to be. And one of those was shot down in Flatwoods, West Virginia. And it was doing repairs, and that's what people witnessed. And my friend Frank Vecchino has done research on it and talked to people that were still alive at the time. And he came away thinking that he traced everything where it went and how they came here and the government's response to try to take these things down, and some of them were brought down. Many of our pilots were brought down in the process. And it was basically a little war that went on that we weren't aware of, the public wasn't aware of. And I think the only reason that these craft shot back is because they were just defending themselves. They easily could have done a lot worse. And they seem to be coming here because we were doing military maneuvers. And it appeared that there were several different races. The race that these people saw was huge, very tall, almost reptilian looking, and they had an extreme odor, and there was an acidic about them, because one individual was driving in his car, and he stopped his car, and this thing was hovering on some kind of craft, and it lowered itself down and touched his car and burnt the car, left like a trail of some kind of burn mark. So it tells that this being has some kind of acidic body. And many people witnessed this, hundreds of people. Frank interviewed all kinds of people before he's written a couple of books about it. And again, to me, it just proves that, you look at people that have been taken, abducted. I've talked to a lot of those people as well, Paul, and they tell a very similar story that they, not only are they being taken maybe to procreate, but some of them feel like they're being given knowledge, or their DNA, or their body's being changed for maybe a day, that there's going to be connection, some kind of connection with all of us.
I sure hope so. It sounds very much like what Linda Moulton Howe is telling me, mm-hmm. and has on her website, that perhaps in the 1951-53 period, that Harry Truman gave the order, open fire on these right. son of a guns that are right. invading our airspace. And that there was some somewhat limited firing back, and it was not a wise idea. And we had some airplane crashes that were very mysterious and unexplained, including as far back as January of 1942, as I wrote in my book, Three Presidents, Two Accidents, the very strange aircraft accident that killed Carol Lombard and 21 others
really?
On a mountain really? Where they saw at least one witness, maybe more, saw a lantern-colored yellow light in the sky. It was hovering over the mountain where the spaceship crashed, and as people showed up, the light disappeared. And there was no explanation for this, and a bunch of FBI documents were blacked out, and you couldn't get them for 40 years until a Freedom of Information Act recovered these UFO-type reports the FBI were putting together in 1942, and just what in the world was going on. These American military pilots were on board with Carol Lombard after a war bond drive, and they were headed to Los Angeles and inexplicably smashed into the side of a mountain on a crystal clear night. So that would be one example, and Linda Moulton Howe has several more if people want to go to her earthfiles.com website and learn more.
Yeah, Linda's really done a lot. She's continually staying right out in front of it. I've read her stuff for years, and she's really amazing, all the things that she's brought forward. She covers everything and anything, not just
right.
UFOs, so I really like that. And
I got a chance to meet her in April of two springs ago in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, and she's just an amazing lady. Keeps on chugging even into her 70s.
Wow. I see her a lot, too, on the Ancient Aliens. You said you had a part in that as well. Have you been on Ancient Aliens?
I was told that maybe they're going to contact you to interview you, Paul, and I thought, oh boy, I'm going to be on national television. But it turns out they decided to cover my book's topic by interviewing their own stable of UFO experts and save their money in flying me out there and interviewing me. So I didn't get to be on the show, but they did show the cover of my book and go into some of the information in an episode in 2016 that they've repeated many times called Beyond Roswell.
You should ask for a little royalty out of it. That's it.
You know, yeah.
Just throw that out there.
You can still go to the ArgusBooks.com website if you're looking for a copy of my books. They used to be on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It might still be, but I'll give a little tip for your listeners that Argus has free shipping, and you can't get that with everyone. And they offer books at a reasonable price, and you get them without any shipping charges. So there you go.
Your first one is about the accident, and then the second one, Three Presidents, Two Accidents. It says more Mo 41 UFO crash, but what else is in that? What do you mean by the three presidents, the two accidents, Roswell and the first one?
Yeah. Well, the Cape Girardeau crash of 41 and then the Carol Lombard airplane crash of 42 and how they might be somewhat related. FDR was in charge and they were starting to examine the bodies apparently and the ship, and this strange UFO showed up for a perfectly healthy airplane that crashed into the side of this mountain. I relate to some other stories, such as, here's a strange one. The Prime Minister of Canada was a man named Mackenzie King. He, too, was a 33-degree Freemason and a very close friend of Franklin Roosevelt's. He used to attend seances, and he loved to go to parties where they use Ouija boards and contact the dead, and he was greatly interested in life after death and life beyond Earth. And I looked up in my research, and guess who just happened to decide the day after the crash, Sunday the 13th, that he wanted to take a train from Ottawa, Canada to Washington, D.C., and visit with his good friend Franklin Roosevelt. And he did so on the day that people were showing up at the White House for conferences that I feel these military big shots and scientist Dr. Van Everbush on what had crashed in Cape Girardeau. So it makes perfect sense that Mackenzie King would travel to Washington. He would have been very interested and very trusted by a fellow Freemason like President Roosevelt.
Interesting. Yeah, it certainly seems like that would be more than a coincidence, doesn't it, that this individual came down and they had to know about these things, I think, even prior to that, that we were being visited and contacted, because there have been reports in our culture. And I can't believe that the government turned a blind eye. You know, there was that crash in the 1800s in Texas on that ranch. And didn't the guy bury a body, the guy that was the rancher?
Some sort of story that the townspeople buried a body. However, there are two different sources that looked into that story. One was like Kevin Randall's, and the second was Bill Burns, who had a whole UFO hunters show, and they looked into it and decided there's nothing extraterrestrial there. So I kind of shied away from that story in my book. I'll pass along a real quick, interesting side note on the 1941 crash. So many Freemasons were in power in FDR's administration. And as I've mentioned, the Mackenzie King visit, well, the Freemasons loved the Capitol building. And there's this story from Reverend Turner Holt's two daughters that he came back from a visit to Washington, D.C. one day and said, I was shown a storeroom down well below the Capitol, many stories down below, and there was a crashed spaceship there, cut up into sections and three dead bodies in three glass jars, he said, and their description matched the Cape Girardeau crash exactly. And it seems a little wild to say at first that the bodies from Cape Girardeau and the recovered crash materials were taken to the Capitol building and snuck down below, but I'm finding more and more that this was correct. I got a call on New Year's Eve from a man who says, I was a child and my father was a member of the Roosevelt administration. He took me in there. I saw the jars and I saw the crash stuff. That story is real.
Wow.
So, yeah, where else would you put it? It would be guarded by military police, the Army. There would be like seven or eight stories above you in the old Capitol building that for some reason the Freemasons are wild about. And that Secretary Cordell Hull was involved, and I found out through some more research that he was buried in a building in Washington, D.C., down below the basement. It's very strange.
Well, that's really interesting. You were able to get some confirmation from somebody who was part of Roosevelt's administration. That is really cool.
Well, his father was.
Right. The son maybe wasn't firsthand, but still, how many kids are going to, I mean, would you go around making up things? I suppose some people would. But your own father. So we always have to take it at word, because we're not going to wind up getting this aluminum type stuff that's going to fall in our yard. And look at, I'm crumbling it up, but it goes back to its full shape. I'm just going to set this in my garage. And I'm sure if I call some people, it'll be fine. And we find out, you know, some guys dressed in black, maybe with black sunglasses, will show up, or just it'll disappear right out of there.
Well, in the 1941, we didn't know what to do, so it looks as though the Army Aerial Corps from Sykeston drove up to Cape Girardeau at least 30 miles or so to this farm, took it back down in trucks to the airfield and then flew it maybe the next day, Easter Sunday, when almost everyone is at home or church, not paying attention to any military maneuvers. And they could have brought it in the middle of the night to a side entrance of the Capitol and brought it down in an elevator and, you know, sworn to secrecy. And in those days, I want to emphasize for everyone that you did what the government told you. You didn't protest or open your big mouth. The government told you something, and you just were patriotic, and you obeyed. So the times have changed greatly. I wouldn't recommend, as you say, I've found all this stuff in my yard and my these bodies and everything. See what will happen to you.
Yeah. You know what? Good luck with that, because even though now it seems like they don't aggressively go after people as much as they used to in more recent reports, you still, things disappear, and there just seems to be a bigger disinformation machine that's out there. So they don't really need to. It just doesn't even make the national press. You know, UFO stories, they don't cover them.
Yeah, I read where some paperwork revealed that the government had a program to wreck your reputation if you came forward, like back in the 50s, and discredit you to make you look like a fool and let you talk openly about things that they knew were not so, to help ruin you and that no one would take UFO stories very seriously. I don't know if that's still being done, but it's kind of sad that our government would take that response to its own citizens, but times have changed.
Yeah, well, and then, you know, maybe we're going to learn some things here that maybe our government always hasn't been such, always the good guys, you know? Maybe none of the governments of the world have been always the good guys.
Yeah. I was told, and I don't know if it's true, that someone asked President Trump about UFOs and opening up the files, and he said, I'm not a fan of that. And he gave a very negative response. So don't look for anything anytime soon. Another source said Vice President Pence is a very religious person who's not into UFOs. He doesn't want to hear about such matters either. So it's not going to happen anytime soon, as far as I know.
Well, I think also that once you get in there to the Oval Office, and I've heard this said before, they are going to let you in on a lot of things that the rest of the world does not know. So as far as I know, you know, once you become commander-in-chief, you're made aware of these things that are going on. And one of them is UFOs. I think they let us know about advanced. Maybe they're keeping Trump in the dark on this. I don't know, but I think they do let most of the presidents. Jimmy Carter, when he saw a UFO, remember when? And he said, when I get in there, I'm going to release this stuff about it. And then he totally clammed up.
He clammed up. He found out some things, and he clammed up. And even to this day, he doesn't want to talk about it.
Right.
Jimmy Kimmel had on George W. Bush and President Obama on his show, and he asked them specifically, and they won't give a straight answer. They won't tell you. They just smile and make a silly little joke, and it's just a subject that you know they know, but they're not talking, and it's just so frustrating what the truth is. Other than reasonable conjecture can tell you, scientists and cosmologists have been saying this for years now. We are not alone in this universe. It's probably teeming with life. We're getting closer and closer to finding star systems with planets that are human, or rather Earth-like, and they could have any kind of form of life, inferior to ours, very crude, or very advanced and superior. So it's probably a matter of time before we discover something on our own through our astronomy and our space telescopes and such, whether they come here or crash here or not. It'll be an exciting future as our technology improves and we go along in this new century if we don't blow ourselves up or ruin the planet first.
You know, I'm up with the belief, Paul, because I've talked to many abductees, different people, and I think there really is a movement towards disclosure. And I think that there will come a day, and it may not be that far down the road, that I think these beings are nudging our government to tell the truth, to let us all know the truth. And I think little by little, they're letting things out. Movies can release some of that truth, like a good movie for that would have been Close Encounters, I think was probably based on some actual things that have happened. And there's been other movies, even E.T., there was a former military man who said, you know, E.T. was based on the Roswell crash and one of the beings staying alive, you know, except, you know, they made it more of a family-friendly event. And they made the alien kind of cute and adorable. But he said, one of these beings survived Roswell, and we sent out a message to space to try to help this being before he died. And others showed up eventually, and this being eventually died before we could get it a whole lot of help. So if there's any truth...
I've heard that, yeah.
You've heard that story as well.
I have, and let's remember that Steven Spielberg based E.T. and Close Encounters on the actual data compiled by Jacques Vallée. You ever heard of that name? A French-based UFO investigator and writer?
No.
And these were actual case studies where the UFOs would appear and the power in your community would go out, or in your pickup truck as Richard Dreyfuss loses power in his pickup while he's out and he looks up and there's a spaceship and such. And here's a connection to the Cape Girardeau crash, MO-41. Steven Spielberg was married to Kate Capshaw, and they would come into town apparently once in a while to go to a small town nearby out in the farms, communities called Chaffee, Missouri. The crash happened apparently between Cape and Chaffee, and they would go out to the small town of Chaffee because Kate Capshaw had a daughter by a previous relationship from a man from Chaffee, Missouri. So you watch Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls, and one of the characters says, there were other crashes besides Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, where did Steven Spielberg get that information?
Right.
So I think he knows something, and who knows, he might have known about the Cape Girardeau crash, but I tried to send some of the Capshaw family a copy of my book, but I never heard back.
You know, I think that if it's, you know, this is what I've heard for a long time, but they are, like I said, they've been given a timeline to let us know that the truth has to come out. And they're trying to do it in many different ways. Look how the Vatican changed their tune on, no, there is no other life. Well, there might be life out there.
Yes.
We think,
and we have a giant observatory to search for life. They're like, what?
Yeah. Why are you looking for life out there if there is no other life? Why did you build this? Why does that exist?
Yeah.
And so, if it's true, what I've heard for years and years and years is that there's an agenda and they want to bring it forward. The truth has to come out, and they're slowly letting that out a little bit here, a little bit there through movies. Maybe once in a while you hear a truth and somebody might release something. You know, it's fascinating getting back to, totally shifting gears, going back, the accident of Carol Lombard. I remember my mom telling me about, you know, at the time she was married to that very famous actor. Who was she married to?
Clark Gable.
And so the whole world was devastated because they were like the couple.
Yeah.
And he was devastated.
Huge news back then.
And I just always felt that was so sad that he lost his wife like that. And I never thought that it was UFO related, somehow connected to that. And you believe that there's something there to that.
Right. Another story said there were red or amber-colored lights in the sky. And back in those days, you didn't have drones, helicopters. You didn't have stationary, like, Harrier airplanes. You didn't have people messing around in the skies with, like, flares. You hear the Phoenix lights.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the
yeah.
government dropping flares, which is a lot of nonsense. They had to come up with something.
Right.
So it's an amazing story, and if people want to read more about that, I have a couple of special chapters in Three Presidents and Two Accidents. But I think I'll backtrack for just a bit and mention that President Reagan invited Steven Spielberg to the White House in 1982 to show the movie E.T., and there was a rumor for many years that Reagan took Spielberg aside after it was over and said, well, you don't know how true that movie is. And just a few years ago, Spielberg spoke up and said, you know that rumor that Reagan said that? The story is actually true. He did tell me that. So what did President Reagan know? How did he know ETs are here and, you know, can be communicated with perhaps? So it's interesting that Reagan let slip something, and he was a visitor to Cape Girardeau, believe it or not, before he became president and during his president. Yeah, he came to Cape in 1986, around the time he started making speeches to the United Nations saying, what if we were threatened by an enemy force? We would all come together. You remember those speeches that he gave? And then suddenly he clammed up, like somebody got to him and said, don't mention this
again. Well, he wanted to... he was pushing for his strategic defense initiative.
You're right.
And then he was going to share that with the Russians, and everybody's going, what the heck? I remember that yeah. well. And, but if there yeah. was a, if he was under the mindset that these things were going to invade, that maybe we all need to come together and defend ourselves. And maybe somebody put that in his head. But I think if these things wanted to invade, they could have done it. Even if we had the SDI, they could they right. could do it anytime they want because they
could brush aside our silly technology.
They have
I want to emphasize real quick that President Reagan came to CAPE around 1986. He didn't attend any public events. He got into some cars or a motorcade that took him to some private meetings and then like a fundraiser, and then he got out of town quietly. So if there was any sort of firsthand investigation of the Missouri 41 story, I'm not aware of it. But it is kind of strange. He showed up in the late 70s campaigning for office in Cape Girardeau and posed at the airport. And we've had one time Richard Gere was starring in the movie Mothman. You remember that?
Yes.
He came to Cape Girardeau and was caught by the media out at the airport. And they asked him what he was doing here. And he says, I want privacy. Leave me alone. So it turns out that he had done a lot of research for that movie into UFOs, and it kind of makes you want to know what's going on and what do people know.
You know, if you follow the Mothman story, the real story, written up a book that was written back in the 60s, and I don't know the author's name because I actually had it on my show for a little bit a while back, years ago. But this man who did the research on that, you know, the movie doesn't do it justice because... Yeah, there was some kind of creature that people saw, but also there were UFO activity in Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
Something like that.
They saw that, and then there were also men in black that showed up, according to the research of this author. So maybe that's why Richard Gere was looking into that, because maybe, and they cut that from the movie, the UFO part. They just wanted to make it seem like it was this Mothman character, which that in itself is strange, too, because I do believe people saw something. There's amazing reports. They saw something. Are you open to those things as well, or are you just kind of focused on the UFO thing, Paul?
I don't mind such stories. They're of interest, but for the past 6 months, I've been researching the Kennedy assassination. I think I have a fresh angle on that, and I'm looking to get a book published later this year. There should be more documents released in late April that might be able to help my theory. For now, it's just a theory, but maybe if you're into that topic, we can do another show later, in September, October, thereabouts.
Do you think he knew about, he wanted to, one of the things I heard about JFK and the reason behind his assassination was that he wanted to release the UFO cover-up to the people. He wanted the public to know about it.
I've heard that, too, that he was curious, and one Air Force member who was on... Air Force One said, I got up the courage and walked over to the aisle and asked Mr. President, there was a UFO story in the newspaper, and he said, what do you think? And Mr. Kennedy said, well, I know some things, and I'd like to tell the American public, but my hands are tied. And you kind of wonder, well, who ties the hands of the president, the most powerful represented American in American politics and government, that tells you can't talk about this? So it's a little unusual. It's sketchy, but it reminds me of a friend of Marilyn Monroe's who said that Marilyn told him shortly before she died that President Kennedy and Robert Kennedy told her that he went to an Air Force base out west where he was shown some crash materials and some bodies of little gray aliens. But that's somewhat of a third-hand story, but it kind of fits, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think all the presidents at some point are probably have to be clued in at. There are things that have to come up that they know about and they have to be made aware of. And I think that in Kennedy's case, I heard that, I don't know what you've uncovered, why you feel that he was assassinated, but I think he wanted to release everything I've heard from former military and people that talked about it have said he wanted to release, change a couple of things. He wanted to get us out of Vietnam, which is a big moneymaker. You know, war is a big moneymaker for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a no-no. And then another reason was he wanted to release information about the UFO cover-up.
and was even discussing sharing information with the Soviets and the space program, and that the conservative powers that be in the CIA and other forces in America were not keen on that idea at all. However, I'm finding out that the mafia in America were absolutely incensed with the Kennedys and wanted the war, the Kennedy war on organized crime, over with, and they were likely the driving force behind the assassination. So I would love to see more documents released. They're supposed to come out in late April, and hopefully we'll find out more. But as someone pointed out, they've been in the government's hand for about 56 years. It'll be like parking a Mercedes in the poor part of town and coming back 56 years later and hoping to find it intact.
Yeah.
It's going to be redacted, cut up, and still documents removed, and there's not much we can do about it.
No, not at this time. Is there anything else you want to tell us, Paul, about this at all?
I guess that wraps it up. Like I say, you can still contact Argus Books, argusbooks.com, and find out more within my books and websites that I've mentioned, and keep your eyes to the skies and see what else comes our way in the future.
So it's Mo 41, The Bombshell Before Roswell, and then Three Presidents, Two Accidents, More, Mo 41, UFO Crash, Data and Surprises,
right.
And
I thank you for mentioning that and how you can get it from Argus Books and having me on the show.
Thank you, Paul, for coming on today.
You're welcome.